Okay, this is the Marysville Board of Education regular meeting of October 17th, 2013. Can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Mabey.
Here.
Mrs. Devine.
Here.
Mrs. Greer.
Here.
Mrs. Lassiter.
Here.
Mrs. Powers.
Here.
Okay, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Next up is the agenda. I need a motion to approve the agenda, please.
Move.
Second.
Moved and second. Were there any additions, deletions, comments, or otherwise? Hearing none, then can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mrs. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabey.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, employee of the month. One moment, please. Pull up my. One second, I was just pulling. Okay. Next up, I need a motion to approve Michelle Gonzalez as the Marysville Exempted Village Employee of the Month.
Moved
and second. Ms. Mankin.
It is my pleasure to award Shelly to her award tonight. So come on. I always embarrassing me to come in front of everyone. It's a packed house tonight, so you get to listen to all the wonderful comments that are. Thank you. And I had some handwritten notes as well. Late entries. Shelly obviously works at Northwood. If you've had the opportunity to go into Northwood, she always meets you with a smiling face. One of the first people I met coming to the district, and that made me feel very welcome. This year in particular, I will talk about, let's see, has always had a lot on her plate, but this year in particular, due to reductions of office staff, she always completes every task without a complaint and with a smile. Even when Michelle, Shelley, is at a breaking point, she holds herself together professionally and treats everyone with kindness and respect. She truly amazes me, and I look up to her as someone I want aspire to be. Shelley is an amazing person who cares about our children, parents, and staff. She's always willing to lend a hand, make things happen for our school. She is a true professional who proudly represents our school.
All right, thank you. And thank you for what you do. You are the face of the district when people walk into our doors, and you're the first person they see, and that leaves a lasting impression. So your job is very important. So thank you for what you do. And your roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabey.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, we have a presentation on the Affordable Care Act. Ladies?
Mr. Gunn,
Delayed response?
Take that out for us, I think. Yes, is it loaded up?
Yes.
Yes, she shared it.
Go to slideshow.
Lynette was going to be here this evening, but she got pulled away. So Wendy and I are going to do this presentation with you. I'm Krista Rockefeller. I teach at Creekview along with the Union Insurance Lead. And we just came out having a very informative meeting Monday with Milestone, who's our new broker for insurance. And as you all know, it's called PATACA. And ACA, which is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which was passed into law back 3 years ago in March 2010. And the provisions in that are now starting to take effect. Our district was hit with some of them over the summer. Some of the main ones are coming into play in the next few months. So we just kind of want to bring you up to speed as to how it's impacting our district and some of the things that we're working on. There will be a significant cost to our district, as you know, if you work out the private sector as well. Nobody really is unscathed from this. So when it comes to our district, unfortunately, there are some fees, fines, whatever word you would like to use that our district will be assessed that is just law. It's just how it's going to be. Pretty much this is a summary right now of some of the fees that our district is going to be experiencing. The first one is patient-centered outcome. Pretty much, if you see where that is, it starts in 2014. And right now, it's an average of $2 per average number of lives covered. This fund's a trust for advancing comparative clinical effectiveness research. So is that something that will impact us directly? No, it's just a fund that this money will go into. Then there's the transitional reinsurance fees, and this gets paid to the IRS. For 2014, this is going to be a little over $78,000, which equates to about $63 per member per year. So right now, from my understanding, this is some, one of those things that will continue when it involves the IRS. So it's paid by the carriers, and it gets passed on to the employers. So from my understanding, we pay the carrier, the carrier pays the IRS. So that's a carrier fee there. As it says up there, the funds state nonprofit reinsurance entities, which will establish high-risk pools for individual markets. So once again, this is a program that benefits others at the expense of the employer. And then there's also an insurer fee on fully insured plans, which Marysville is. And in 2014, we're looking at around $136,000, and this is based on the percent of premiums. And this will once again subsidize that PPACA cost. So these really aren't benefits as a district that we will reap from. This is just how this new ACA works. We pay in to help others, just because we can't afford health insurance, get there.
So if I did my math right, we're going to pay over $200,000 this year just for the privilege of paying for other people's insurance?
Absolutely.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how this works. So that's a hit our district will definitely take, and it's law. So it's just how it's going to be. That's not even the nature of the beast of your normal health insurance increases that you see. And like it says up there, these are estimates kind of based on our current numbers, from my understanding, from the first 6 months right now of this year. So some of these are based on members, so if that fluctuates, these numbers will fluctuate a little bit.
Now, that's not members, and that's not everyone. That's just employees, correct? So not employees and spouses, it's just members, correct?
I think it varies with some of them.
Well, I know the top one is everyone. But yes. I was wondering about the second one.
Per member per year.
So that's per employee, then, right?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to make sure, because, I mean, if there's a decision...
Each one has its own little...
Right, and that's a lot of money. If there's a decision to be made on if we want to decide on how that's...
Right.
I just want to see how that's going to work.
Okay. Each one has it. It's kind of targets its own little population.
Sure.
For whatever reason that may be. And then we wanted to share with you just what our upcoming... Did you skip this
one? I missed a page?
It's not working here. Okay, that's right. Like I said, we had a very interesting meeting Monday evening, and this is really just from the first 3 months. This is pretty much from January to the end of April. Unfortunately, we have some very high claims in our district, and as you see up there, the initial usage was very high. This is not typical of what our district has seen in the past few years. Unfortunately, we had one claim that was over $268,000. There was another one at $168,000. There were three that were over $104,000. Those are exceptionally high claims. That is not the norm for our district, but unfortunately, it's the reality right now for our district. And a couple were over $50,000, and those were, I think, specific like pharmacy kind of issues. One claim was a little over $100,000, and it did close out. From my understanding, that's from an employee who's no longer with us, so that is when we can drop off the books. The others that you see again are going to carry over. I mean, they're continuing. That's just how it is. And that was really kind of the first 3-4 months. So, you know, it wasn't a great way to start the year, but that's just how that goes. So right now we're sending out quotes. We've received a few back. United Healthcare is our current provider of our health insurance. They came in initially very high, but they're working with us to bring that down. So we're still trying to work with them on that. We're waiting on a few others. One is actually from a consortium, which our district is we're looking at all the options. And a consortium is where you bring in other districts. And there's pros and cons. And Milestone is going to do they're going to help us understand the pros and cons of working with a consortium. You know, sometimes it can be lower cost, but then other times you don't have control, because there's so many other parties involved. So we are going to look at those numbers as something different, because we've not really entertained consortiums. but we're waiting on those bids to come in. We're hoping by the middle of next week we will have them all so that we can sit down and really discuss what's the best step for our district. Unfortunately, though, no matter where we go, if you see in that little sidebar there, approximately 6.5% of the increase, there's nothing we can do about it. It's those fees you saw in that previous slide. So no matter what, that's law. 6.5%. It'll fluctuate based on members, like you said, Jeff, and things like that. But you're looking at that as bottom line. Even if we came in at zero technically, you're still looking at a 6.5 because it's the new ACA. That's just how that's running. Dental, you'll see it, they came with a 9% increase, but due to that premium holiday, they're hoping to offset that to zero. So we're hoping just to stay cost neutral with dental. Vision, right now, the initial quote that came in, if we stayed with VSP, is 11%, but that does include your 6.5%. So you're going to see that across the board. So we're still in that process. This is kind of like crunch time for us on the insurance committee and working with Cindy. We're really, because we have to get this out to our members. So we're in a crunch situation right now, and we're working, we're putting a lot of pressure on them to give us the best scenario without really jeopardizing the coverage that we have right now.
Has anybody calculated on those plans what your increase would be as an employee?
Yes.
Is that a slide farther down?
I don't know if that's actually included, because were just given to us Monday.
Okay, that's fine. I was just curious. I can't imagine somebody didn't
do it. It was based on a certain percent of the increase if it were to be today.
Right.
So we're not ready to share those yet, but yes, it has been shared with us what the potential could be.
Yeah, let's go up to the medical just to be so that everybody understands. Our initial was 34%. We're down to about 17% from UHC. And Krista mentioned the consortium. That's an MMO. They're on the MMO networking. And we were waiting on an MMO fully funded network bid. MMO, UHC, both have pretty good benefits, discounts for the doctors and hospitals in this area. They're very competitive with each other. The one thing about the Jefferson County Consortium, we would be self-funded. We would sort of be fully funded, but self-funded within that. With this number of large claims, I'd be very leery, being the school district, being self-funded because of these claims.
Would we just be self-funded here, or would we be with the rest of
We would be within that group. So
because you do get away from some of the...
Some, but not all, because you still, when they do that, they're going to bridge yours in there. So it's sort of, you're still self-funded, but you're full, it looks sort of like a fully funded, so it's a merge of both. That number of large increases or large claims is what they had before they went into the HSA and that kind of, and that's when they were self-funded and about broke the bank here in the district. So we're very cautious of looking at that. That's going to be one of the last steps to see, because coming from people, an area that was self-funded, I know how that can really mess your books up real quick.
When you said the 17% increase, is that inclusive of those
yes.
fees? Okay.
Yes.
That's with the 6.5.
Yeah. That's with the 6.5 right now.
So
okay, good.
So really,
I mean, still not good, but that's a lot better than 35.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
considering last year we came in a little less than that.
Yeah.
So when those initial numbers came back, we're like, that's six times what it was the year before. I mean, they're helping to explain it, but we were just like...
We had no idea that we had that many high claims.
Yes.
We knew of maybe one or two, but we didn't realize that there were that many, to be honest. But
I think in general, I mean, across the board, everybody's seeing... a lot higher increases this year than last year. So.
Oh,
well, the insurance companies.
Right there.
Sure, they're buffing for the Affordable Care Act.
Well, even before that,
has nothing. That's just our hands are tied with that.
Right.
So like I said, we have a committee, and we're working on this, and we're working with Lynette and Wendy. We're all working together to really put some pressure on them, and so we're hoping to come back with the best results for our district and for our members as well, because that's a hit that not many people were expecting. It turns out to be 17%. That's a huge, huge
Have you guys started talking about some, just in case you can't get it down, some plan adjustments that you guys would be willing to...
Yes, there are ways to tweak the plan, but then I believe it starts impacting coverage.
Right.
Because actually, on the high end of our deductibles.
Right.
So we really can't go any higher with our deductibles because then I think it becomes unaffordable.
You get to a point that you're going to break that, especially now with the rules with the Affordable Care Act.
Okay. So does the of the three plans, the one that has the highest deductible, that's the least expensive.
Yes.
Is that still?
Yes, it's still within.
Or is it?
It's still within.
The Affordable Care Act.
Yes, but it's still within.
Unfortunately, even like right now, if you have that thing, you don't pay anything, but you will be paying something because of this.
Right.
But if we go beyond those deductibles, then we become unaffordable.
Right.
And then
that's why I'm wondering if they qualified or not.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's a very fine line we're walking right now. It's a balancing act for us right now.
Have they talked a couple years down the road? Because I know some of these plans might be, and I don't know if ours qualify as Cadillac plans, but down the road. But
we don't have any Cadillac plans.
And they wouldn't be down the road.
Okay.
But if people within our district go to the exchange, we get charged a penalty because they don't take our insurance as well.
Right.
And then it impacts the amount of members or belly buttons that we have insured, which then could possibly increase the premium.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? No, not that. That about if people
if
go to
people
the exchange.
If people go to the exchange and don't take our insurance, then we get penalized because they don't take our insurance.
Mm-hmm. And they can't get on.
So there's additional fees that we will pay aside from that $6,000. Yeah, the ones we showed you are like the transparent ones right now.
Right.
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 But and there's some hidden ones.
And I'm sure there's ones that you haven't seen yet.
And right next month. If we have members decide to go into the marketplace, or possibly for some of our classified staff, if they fall under that 30 hours and is deemed not affordable, we could lose them, so then it impacts our numbers, they get covered. So it's, like I said, it's a very fine line that we're walking right now. So I think we would like to keep as many of our members insured as possible, because like Wendy said, there'll be fees, you drop members, it affects your premiums. So it's a very fine line right now. So, we just wanted to share this real quick. This is insurance costs as a national average. So you can see it's about like a 14-year time span. And over in the box is where our district is. So as a family, you know, it's running close to $15,000, and a single is like $5,500. So we're coming in close to, if not below, what the national average has been. So our district has worked very hard over the last few years to keep our health insurance in check, to do what we can. And we know the nature of the beast is going to always go up, but if you can see on national average, we're running right there or slightly below. So we just kind of wanted to share that so you're aware of the fact that we're doing everything within our power to keep it in check. And this is just one of those visuals to kind of help you understand that. And then we wanted to share, everybody's always asking, you know, so what does this really cost our district? On average, it's just health insurance, visual, all that that you see right there. We always talk about benefits, but there's so much involved in benefits. But the health portion of it, including life insurance, costs the district about 10% of the actual budget. So that's where we're sitting. So you see the district cost per year, so you put those numbers in, we're running about $4.8 million just for this part of it right here. And that doesn't include, you know, all the benefits that, you know, people talk about. But we kind of wanted to, you know, give you that visual and that breakdown so you can see where those dollar amounts are being spent right now. So it's running about 10% of our total budget, just that part of it. And the other thing real quick is you know, we're really going to inform our members, you know, about this. I mean, that, like I said, that's a huge 17% possible increase, which is a hit that, I don't know, that if somebody came to me and said this is going to cost 17% more and you had 6 weeks to prepare for it, that's going to be a tough one. Mm-hmm. So that's why we wanted to make sure we educate you. And then Wendy's going to share with you kind of some of the things that we're looking at for the spring to kind of help offset those costs as well. I'm Wendy Grimm. I work in human resources. And like Krista was talking about, we have some saving strategies that we're trying to put into place. One is we switched brokers to Milestone Benefits Agency, and they're definitely being proactive in keeping us ahead of all the changes with the health government, healthcare, Affordable Care Act. They have a more customized approach to benefits administration, and they've been reviewing all of the benefits that we offer and offering solutions to reduce our costs and improve our benefits. They also have set up a website for all of our employees, our staff, to go to. So if they have questions before, we would have to direct people either to call us or to go to our board staff page, the La Perina Healthcare. They actually set up a webpage that our staff can go to, and just all of the websites that they need to go to for vision, dental, life insurance are right there, and they can go there and access things very easily from like a one-stop shop. One cost-saving measure that we are putting into place is we're going to switch to a new life insurance company on December 1st, which is Mutual of Omaha. The savings will be close to $3,000 per year, and we are in a three-year rate lock, so we will have the same rate for the next 3 years. Our current carrier is United Healthcare Specialties. We've had some issues with them, and now it just seemed like a good time to switch and make that savings, and it will be seamless to our staff. There won't be anything that will affect them, so that transition will be happening here very soon. We also are looking at, we've had a VIVA account for several years here, and we're looking to switch that to a health savings account in 2015 or 2016. That would be a savings of approximately $44,000 per year. Right now, the district pays $7.30 for each VIVA account that we have that's active per month. So there also will be tax advantages for employees. The reason we're not switching sooner is we really need to take a close look at that. With people that have VIVA, some of people have saved up a lot of VIVA money. We have to make sure that we are communicating and getting this ahead of staff so they know it's coming. They're not going to lose anything by doing this. It's just informing them of what exactly is going to happen. We also have had a wellness incentive program in place for the past 2 years. We just finished up this year, and we had 95% participation for this. People that don't participate, if they have our insurance, they will pay 5% more for their insurance. So that's a real hit to the pocket, especially like Krista was talking about, because we're going to be increasing the rate. So if it's a, I don't know, just if, for example, was a 17% increase for them, it would be 22%. So that's huge. For our staff that does not take our insurance, they will lose 5% of their stipend that they get for waiving. So again, that's a hit as well. But the goals of the wellness program is to increase employees' awareness of the health and wellness, and they're just required to do three simple steps. For those people that aren't on our insurance, they have to do one step. And we make it very easy. We do multiple communications, reminders, try to be, as you know, over-communicate as much as we can about it. So for the people that don't complete it, and we actually had staff that just said they wouldn't do it as well. So one thing we're looking at going to as well in 2014 is something called Empower 360, and it would be a one-stop system for our staff. It would be a streamlined portal for eligibility, benefits, and healthcare financial management. And the next slide basically just kind of tells you a little bit about it. It would be where they could do online enrollment at open enrollment time. It would be where they could go and we get a lot of phone calls now saying, you know, what do I have for my dental? Do I have my family on my dental plan? What plan am I on? How much do I have to pay for this? This would be on the staff side where they could go and they could see everything they have. They could see their plan that they have, who's on their plan. They could check and say, oh, my address is wrong. Oh, you know, I don't have the right beneficiary. I want to change that. So this would be kind of a one-stop shop. There's a very robust reporting system. There's a call center that people could call if they had questions. It would just be a full benefit administration system. This is one of the things that really appealed to us too, the self-service. This basically would be something to look at their dashboard and they can see how much they have to pay, what their portion is that they've had to pay, their deductible, how much they've spent in dental, vision, just something visual to show them how much they're spending, you know, for the year in each of those areas. There's even a place where they can actually pay their bills online as well, like if they want to pay directly to their doctor, they'll be able to hit a button and make that payment directly online. So just it would be a very, very slick system for us to go to.
Cool.
And we just want to open it up if you had any questions.
Is that as a milestone that they would set all that up for you?
They would help set it up. It's actually tied to Mutual of Omaha.
Okay.
So we would get continue to, it would be another service that they would offer.
Oh, okay.
In addition, and that's how we would continue to get that savings for them as well. So they would help us to get it set up.
Gotcha. Any questions? Thank you very much. You guys are doing incredible work, and you didn't really sell the Affordable Care Act this time. I got to be honest with you. But thank you very much. And like I said, I know you guys are working to try to keep those rates down as low as you can, because it helps you and it helps us. So appreciate that. All right, next up, Joanne Orbiter from our food service department is going to give us an update.
Can I take this one out? Is there another spot in there? Put the
other spot. If not, just take that one out. Yeah. Just play. Okay. Do you know where it's going to pop up for me? For the technology challenge here. Put me in the kitchen and I'm good to go.
It's good to play to your strengths.
For a few of you that I have not met, it's been a few years since I spoke to you. I'm Joanne Orbiter, the food service director here with Marysville Schools. And we're going to talk a little bit about school lunch and the changes that have occurred. It's been pretty extensive for us the last couple years. This slide is a good representation of the new look of school meals. If you look at the portions, and you can barely read some of the smaller ones here at the top, it goes grains, protein, milk, fruit, and vegetables. That's very proportionate of what the new national school lunch program looks like. The focus is on healthier eating, lots of fruits, lots of vegetables. So we're going to talk a little bit here.
Let's see. Just do the arrow
key. Just hit the right arrow key.
The right one?
Yep. There you go.
The Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010. Some people like to call it Michelle Obama's Act. Actually, this started in about 2008 with the USDA looking at overhauling the National School Lunch Program. It's been in existence since the mid-1940s and had not had an overhaul or a facelift in almost 25 years. So it was kind of due. Upon President Obama getting elected, she kind of made this her focal point and put a very public face on it, and she kind of has taken a lot of rap for it. But it was already well underway before that happened. Basically, I kind of outlined here what's happened. The Congress passed the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act of 2010 that was to start being implemented in 2012. But prior to 2012, Ohio, a grassroots movement, got busy. A lot of parents who didn't like the snacks and beverages in the schools, and we passed Ohio House Bill 210, and it's severely limited what could be sold outside of the school lunch program, the meal program. So we took a real big hit there. Prior to that, we were able to sell Gatorade in 20-ounce bottles. We now have to sell them in 12-ounce bottles at the high school. Snacks came under a whole new healthy guideline of 200 calories is the maximum at a high school you could sell for snacks. It has to be 10% or less saturated fat, 30% less calories from sugar, whole bunch of criteria there. So there was a whole range of things we used to sell a la carte that in one sweeping year, we were no longer allowed to do that. We kind of knew that was coming too. We started a couple years ahead of that mandate that we knew was coming and started phasing out and downsizing to smaller sizes of snacks, going to baked chips. So we didn't have quite the hit here in Marysville, but some other districts did because they just waited till the last minute, and the kids came back in the fall and everything was gone. And so 2012 was the first big year of the new National School Meal Program. They are phasing this in, believe it or not, over almost 11 years. But in 2012, the USDA said we're going to tackle the lunch program because it was such a massive change nationwide. So we started the lunch program in 2012. In 2013, this year, the second year was the phase-in of the breakfast changes.
In 2014, we're going to have the final phase in, along with a new federal snack regulation that's going to mirror very closely what Ohio did in 2011. So, you know, states that hadn't done what Ohio did in 2011 with the snack guidelines are now going to fall under the new federal regulation nationwide in 2014. 2015 through 2023, the meal pattern continues to change with sodium restrictions. Every year, there's another reduction in sodium. So we'll take a real quick look at what those look like. The major changes in the breakfast and lunch program was new calorie limits by age group. We've never had that before. We'd always had the recommended dietary allowance, and we had to meet one-third of those recommendations. But they never gave you a specific set of calories per child. We do now. Who knew vegetables were going to come in five different subgroups? We saw increased portions on the fruits and vegetables, you know, that equated back to that plate you saw on the very first slide. We learned all about what was whole grain rich, a whole new term for us. Whole grain rich is 51% or more whole grain. So we're under mandates now this year, 50% of all breaded products, and this even includes the breading on chicken patties and chicken nuggets, has to be whole grain. Next year, we go to 100%. This was to give the processors of these products a couple of years to catch up.
What's that do to your cost?
Well, it increases our cost. We also moved into new low-fat or non-fat milk. We are still allowed to serve flavored milk. It has to be non-fat. White milk can be low-fat. And we're dealing with the new sodium guidelines. And then they also took us from 5 years to 3 years on state and federal reviews. So those were the major changes. Here's the new meal pattern kind of broken down for you. You see K through 5, the top is breakfast, the bottom is lunch. So you see those new calorie restrictions that are by... So we can no longer take our chicken and noodle recipe and use it district-wide at all levels. It didn't fit into the calories at the elementary. So we had to modify all of our recipes and change them, have three recipes for each grade level, to meet the new calories. On the breads and grains and the fruits and the milk, the number in parentheses is your minimum per day that you must serve. The other number is your maximum per week. So on the bread and grain there at breakfast, you know, the minimum is one. If you serve one bread or grain for breakfast, you're never going to make it to seven, which is your minimum maximum. Lots of new, it was like a jigsaw puzzle. It's been interesting and fun. You can notice at lunch, the high school students get a full cup of vegetables and a full cup of fruit every day. When I first looked at this, I thought, there aren't enough squares on that little tray. You know, it's not all going to fit. I thought, is somebody redesigning the school lunch tray? They haven't yet, but I think it might be coming. But that's just kind of a gauge. Those calories still represent about one-third of the recommended daily allowance by the Dietary Association. So, but they're just more defined. You have a minimum, you have a maximum now that you have to meet. The subgroups, I found this humorous. I still do. We have dark green now. We have red orange. We have legumes. We have starch, and we have other. I find it humorous that green beans are not a bean. They're actually an other. We learned that lima beans, if we dry them, they're bean and legume. If we cook them, they're an other. So we had to learn. As part of the vegetable subgroups, we are now required to offer at a minimum one serving per week from every group. So if you're a district who doesn't offer multiple vegetable selections a day like we do, you only offer one choice a day, potatoes is going to go, if you serve corn one day a week, you're not going to be serving potatoes. You know, you have to get one serving out of starch per week, one serving out of the red orange per week. So it's been interesting how some districts have tackled all this. This was a little easier for us to incorporate because we do offer multiple selections of vegetables at every level every day. So we weren't quite hemmed in as much as some of those districts that just offered one vegetable and that was it. They found it very restrictive and very difficult. What did this impact? We have seen a slight decrease in our meal participation. Nothing compared to some other districts. I sit on a couple state committees. Other districts have had massive decrease in meal participation. It did increase our food costs. When you start doubling portions of fruits and vegetables that you're required to give them, increased labor hours, we've avoided that a little bit. A lot of districts saw, it takes a lot more. They're pushing a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables, too. That's the other mandate in this. You cannot serve canned fruit 5 days a week. So many days a week, you have to have fresh fruit. It takes a lot of labor to process fresh fruit. You know, when you're trying to wedge oranges or apples or cut grapes up into smaller bundles and do 1,000 servings a day like we do at the high school, you know, that's a lot of labor to do that.
It's a lot of grapes.
It is a lot of grapes, let me tell you. And a loss of revenue comes along with that decreased meal participation. Here's our participation history. The district column is on the far end, and again, sorry, I flipped it. This time lunch is at the top and breakfast is at the bottom. We're a little sluggish. These 13, 14 is our September numbers. That also includes those delay start days or the staggered start at the elementary. That slowed us up some those first few days at the elementary. I looked at the numbers today and we were averaging about 26.57 for October. So we picked up about 50 meals a day district-wide at lunch right now. But we have seen a decline. If you look at 2010-11, you know, that was our high point when we were allowed to do just about everything except cola, which we never did, and candy bars. We never sold those things. 2011-12, there came the snack changes, and we lost a little bit of meals there. We managed to work. Then 2012, there came the big change in the lunch menus and having to move to whole grains and having to decrease sizes of protein, decreased bread that they were getting, things like that. And now this year with the implementation of breakfast and additional whole grains. So, that, you know, that's kind of where we're at. We're faring better than other districts. But not where we obviously want to be. Just the financial impact of this, if we look back to 2010 to today, 250 meals a day district-wide, at $3 a meal, that is the reimbursable rate from the USDA, $750 a day. Multiply that times 172 days, that's $130,000 a year. And that doesn't touch the SNAP revenue and the a la carte revenue that we lost some to. So, it has had an impact on us. Opting out. You probably have all heard this phrase in the media. There's been a big, districts are just bolting and leaving because of all this. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of reasons why it's probably not an option or something we want to look seriously at here. 1,406 students would be impacted by this move. We have 1,206 free, 200 reduced students that would simply not have meal service. When you opt out, you leave your federal reimbursement behind. Okay? The meal sales are still going to be affected by the 2014 changes coming. You're going to be restricted what you can sell a la carte. Just because you opt out doesn't mean you're not going to have to comply with the new federal regulations for a la carte sales. You know, and some of those are, they restrict the fat and calories and chicken patties. You're not going to be able to go out and get, pizza made from a pizza shop. That's 450 calories a slice. It's simply not in the guidelines. The loss of federal dollars in commodity entitlement funds and the data collection. That's a big key here in the district that I don't think a lot of departments realize we do. We are the keepers of all that numbers for grant funding, E-rates, Title I. You know, I routinely get emails from principals that say, I need my free and reduced percentages in my building. I'm applying for this grant. Or it affects my Title I funding. That's not to say that We couldn't find another way of gathering that information. But, you know, we gather that now through those parents turning in those applications to us and the state telling us which kids are on the meal assistance. So that, you know, that's another area would be impacted by the opting out. This is just a snapshot of our last year federal funds. Between our reimbursements for breakfast and lunch, we are at 26% free and reduced district-wide. So 26% of our students in the district receive some form of meal assistance. And through the meal assistance, $729,000. The state kicks in an additional $15,000 a year to us for $745,000. In addition to that, every time we sell what is considered the nutritious, healthy USDA meal, the government sets aside 27 cents for every lunch, not breakfast, just lunch, into a, I call it monopoly money. It's entitlement dollars. It's not physical cash you get, but it's money you get to go shopping with on a state website, okay? That equates, you know, we served 494,000 lunches last year. That was $134,655. We took that money this year. It's based on last year's numbers. We put $45,000 with a produce company. We don't pay for produce. Every week the truck comes here and we get fresh produce out of a produce company in Columbus and we don't pay a dime. We're using $45,000 of that monopoly money. The rest of it went to buy truckloads of beef, chicken, cheese. You know, that's what makes our chicken nuggets, our hamburgers, our mac and cheese, cheese on the pizza we buy. So it brings our food cost down. We would be giving up that $134,000 that we earn. So it comes up to a total. We would be paying that out of pocket then and not utilizing that.
I have a quick question. On that commodity, is that mostly produced in Ohio?
Or no, it is all domestically produced within the United States. That's part of the U.S. and the agriculture program that subsidizes farmers in this country. Yeah,
but not from Ohio.
No, it's not
necessarily.
From Ohio. Yeah. You know, several of the big companies we deal with, JTM is Cincinnati-based, Pierre Foods is Cincinnati-based. So we do deal largely with a lot of companies that are. Smucker's is, you know, based in Ohio, and they do grilled cheese sandwiches and things like that.
I just wonder if it was fresh produce, if they try to get it from Ohio farmers or not.
Well, I do know the produce company that we use, they do source locally. I don't know that it's Marysville local as opposed to Central Ohio, but they do source as much locally as they can, but there's not enough locally to supply us year-round.
Right. So you're restricted in who you can use those dollars, the companies that you use those dollars
for? Yes, they're contracted with the state of Ohio, with the Ohio Department of Education. The company is DNO. And any school that belongs in this commodity produce program, which we do, they service a three-state area with contracts from the Department of Defense.
Okay.
Yeah. The good news about all this, you know, kids are eating healthier. I mean, that's clearly visible. We're seeing, you know, initially in this, we thought we'd see a lot of plate waste. Kids are required to take, at a minimum, one fruit or one vegetable has to be on the tray when they go down the line. Now, they can take everything they want, all the components. But if they choose not to want to take all six components, they have to have a minimum of three, and one has to be a fruit or vegetable. They simply cannot get past us without a fruit or vegetable. They didn't like that in the beginning. That really rubbed them the wrong way. And we saw a lot of plate waste. You know, we would see their fruit cup just go out and they just walk right past the trash can. You know, they had to have it on their tray. We're not seeing that plate waste now. So they're easing into it. They've become accustomed to it. It doesn't all look so new to them now. You know, our department is still financially stable. We had a healthy ending balance last year. And we're predicting to be in the positive this year. And we've not increased our meal prices in 5 years. You know, those are all good things. Do I think some of the participation is going to rebound? I think given time. We're a little different here in Marysville than other districts. We have heavy participation in our secondary schools and lower participation in our elementaries. That's a flip for most other districts. Most other districts, they're heavy participations in their elementaries. And but I think we have a lot more stay-at-home parents here in Marysville, too. So, any questions?
I mean, that's amazing that we haven't raised our prices in 5 years. And then obviously the cost of making those lunches increases.
Yeah, and just the fruit and vegetables alone, we have seen probably, we're probably seeing on average 20 cents more per tray. Now, the USDA did step, you know, everybody was screaming, you know, this is an unfunded mandate of all this, you know, increase. Mm-hmm. So they did step up to the plate and say, they put out crazy guidelines. And said, if you can comply with all of these, there's an extra 6 cents per meal. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, the spreadsheet didn't even fit on two computer screens. We were able to accomplish all that. So, and we did it very early last year. So we got that additional 6 cents from the month of October on. Mm-hmm. We did have the USDA come in for 4 days with us in the spring. That was a surprise. They called us a week before they were coming.
to audit you or just?
They just wanted to see how we were complying. They really wanted to talk with our staff. Right. It was really an information gathering visit about, you know, how are we complying? What are we struggling with? You know, what changes we'd like or modifications we'd like to see? We were also one of the 25% of districts statewide who complied with this additional 6 cents. We got pulled for an audit from the state of Ohio. So they were in for 3 days in March. So, and we're really pleased at how well we were implementing it and managing it to do it. So
maybe they just like your chicken nuggets.
They're whole grain chicken nuggets now.
They hand them an apron when they walk in.
Yeah.
Gloves.
You said you were in a positive. Do you mean like cash balance or are we actually bringing in more revenue than we are spending?
Well, last year, we took a little step backwards of about $15,000, first year in 5 years. But that's because we stayed on track and committed to our technology upgrades, equipment upgrades, and renovations of cafeterias. We were really trying to pull hard the last month of May for meals to break even, and we came up just short. But prior to that, years prior to that, we've had increases. Back to 2008, we came out of that year with a $96,000 balance. The next year, we went to 318. Big year there. Then the snack came in. We're at 431. 431,000 was our balance at the end of last year. And we anticipate being about 475 this year. So we anticipate adding about $40,000 to it.
So. Absolutely.
Great job.
Great. Thank you very much. Well, you're running a heck of a department over there.
Well, I don't know. We're having fun. We're learning a lot.
Okay, not sure how. Where's your exit at?
Escape, upper left.
There you go.
That's all. Just once will do.
Oh, there you go.
I want my computer. Cindy and I were renaming the vegetable groups. Yuck, yucky,
gross.
Well, you know, honestly, I had to research the beans and legumes. I really did because I thought, this is foreign territory to me.
Do you guys? Do you ever survey the kids on kind of some of the different things they'd like to see on the menu or how it fits?
Actually,
into that?
We had a group of high school students last week because we have 1 day in the high school that's our lowest ebb of the day, and we just sat down with them and said, "What is it we're not doing on Thursdays? You know, Thursdays are our lowest count of the week."
Lagoons, so, right?
Well, it's taco bar day, taco burrito bar, but I think they're getting tired of that. We'll stay with it. So they actually had suggestions, and so we're modifying our November menus.
Oh, very
and
cool.
We're going to rotate it with some of their suggestions.
Okay.
So.
Very good. Thank you very much. Okay, next up, we have seeds.
Good evening, everybody. Northwood and Creekview was approached about doing a project with the Scotts Corporation. And we had some amazing teachers that volunteered to get involved with this. Basically, what they're going to be talking to you tonight about is the training, some of the interactions we've had. It's started last spring, and they've gotten to do some amazing trainings with the Scotts team and kind of the overview of what they've been doing, because it is them. It is not Mr. Canale and myself. It is the teachers. And we're looking towards getting gardens in the schools and kind of the adventure they've been on. And I'm going to let Tricia, you start.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to let Tricia, she's a sixth grade teacher, Creekview. I'm going to let her kind of introduce, but it's an amazing project. We hope to expand it to more of the elementaries next year, but we're just at the beginning stages, so please ask them questions because it is a learning process. Thank you.
Go ahead and pull this up. Okay, so like she said, we were approached by people from Scotts and the Smithsonian Institute to collaborate to see how we could introduce gardening into the schools and how that would change the learning that was going on in the schools and get the students more involved in what we're doing. And it kind of started as a small project with two teachers at Creekview, two teachers at Northwood, and then through collaboration and discussion, we've expanded to actually we're going to include the entire school at Creekview and the entire school at Northwood. And as well, we've made connections at the high school so that we can bring high school to help us do different parts in the project. So this shows you the business partners that we have. Scotts has been fantastic with their support for this program. I can tell you they've already stepped up and helped us put a fence in at Creekview so that we can have a space that will be protected. And just to mention some of the specific people, Sue Hagedorn is instrumental in getting this started and wanting us to be able to learn more about gardening and then how to use it with our students. Lindsay LaSalle and Sue Locker are Scotts contacts. So they've just been fabulous. And then the Smithsonian Institute, we have Kim Keel, who's the executive director of the Early Enrichment Center, and she is very much motivated by educational research and what we can do to help students learn better. So those are our business partners. And then at the school, this just has us all listed. Ashley Thompson is the teacher of the nursery and landscape class. I teach sixth grade science. Tammy Gould teaches fifth grade science. Amy Canterbury teaches third grade at Northwood, and Davina Smith teaches fourth grade also at Northwood. I also put on here Farms for City Kids in Vermont because that's another partner in this project. It is a farm where they invite city kids to participate, and I think it's a week-long just environment experiencing, taking care of cows, taking care, you know, getting the product from the cow, what we do with it, things that they normally wouldn't have been exposed to. So in some of our trainings that we went through this summer, we got to meet one of the teachers from that particular place, and she talked to us about how that worked. So I'm going to pass it over to Tammy, who's going to tell you what we did at Creekview so far. Oh, yes.
Okay. This is the site we picked for Creekview. We tried to pick a place where it would be kind of protected. And then in the spring, last spring, we had kids go out and measure, trying to for them to form ideas what we might want to put in our garden. So you can see them working together in teams, measuring, recording data, things like that. And then this summer, we visited the Franklin County Conservatory, and we were trying to get ideas for our garden. So this is one, and Scotts actually gave us 30 boxes similar to this for Creekview, and then you guys got some too that we're going to place in our garden area. This is just showing you more from Franklin Park. We got ideas of making like long beds, and the high school is going to help us. They're actually going to help us design the beds where each classroom will probably, or each team will have like a section, and they'll be able to decide what goes in it and kind of design it themselves. And we're kind of thinking of themes.
And this goes along with our Pride Friday activities, if you've heard what we're doing at Creekview. Mm-hmm. So the students are going to be by team assigned one of the large boxes, and they're going to have to figure out what they're going to put in the box, how they're going to take care of what's in the box. You can see sort of the picture on the right, the people had decorated that box, and they have like signage in it that tells about the different plants. So really, it's like a wide open, problem-solving, collaborative, what are you going to do with this space?
Right, and they have to research, too, you know, what would be good to plant, things like that. So there's a lot of different avenues we can go into. And the kids will be the judge of that, too.
There's Northwoods.
At Northwood, we decided that what better way to have a garden, or what better way to incorporate a garden into our classrooms than to involve literature. Every classroom, of course, has a high literature content, and we thought that getting all of our teachers involved would be a great buy-in, not just Amy's class and mine. But so at the beginning of the school year, we talked to the staff, and we introduced the project to them, and let them know about Scott's great interest in this. And each of the grade levels picked a book or a couple books that they thought would be appropriate for their grade level, would incorporate their standards, would be best at the students' level, and then as grade levels, they voted on those.
I'm just showing your outline books. Is that
good? Yeah, that's fine. Absolutely. So each of the classrooms have picked books that they think that are appropriate for them, and our hope then is to have the students pick the material, the plants, the vegetables, from their books that they've chosen as a grade level, then to plant in these beds that Scott has donated to us.
And then we were also wanting to do some sort of an indoor garden in the winter as well. Scott's just encouraged us to kind of think big and try whatever we would like. So probably these gardens will be for the spring, and then we'll do something inside.
And then Ashley's going to talk about the big picture of the high school.
So the high school kind of got involved at the very beginning of this project. It actually started a couple years ago. It started in the food service department, so it was kind of ironic to sit and listen to your presentation today about increasing fruits and vegetables in the diet. Laura Hayes is one of the cooks at Pep on School. At Creekview, and she came to me. Her daughter was a former student of our program, and she said, you know, I've got all of these new regulations for how much more fruit and how many more vegetables I'm supposed to incorporate into these diets, and I thought, what would be a better way to get the students to buy in to eating more fruits and vegetables than maybe to let them see where they come from, and maybe they would take some pride and some ownership in actually cultivating those crops. And maybe then, you know, they'll be a little bit more willing to try my increased fruits and vegetables on their trays. So she had a space to work with, but it was a wide open yard, and she was just a little overwhelmed and said, you know, how do I start with this? So I said, well, that's a great project for my class. It's a nursery and landscape class. It's really all about plant science. Starting a garden is a great project for us. We'd love to help. And so my students kind of took that over, and they've been researching, you know, how do you select a site? How do you plan how much room you want to use? And what's the most economic use of space without taking a place that looks like a nice yard and turning it into a dirty, muddy hole? So they've come up with that, and we did some research and came up with raised beds ideas. From there, we've gone on to figuring out how we're going to build them, what type of lumber we're going to use. We have some restrictions in terms of not being able to use pressure-treated lumber due to the arsenic that's used to treat it. So they had to select materials. They had to come up with plans. They had to strategize and actually learn how to create a blueprint. And now they're going to have to learn how to read that blueprint to construct the beds. And then how do we prepare the ground? What kind of excavation are we going to have to do? And so it's been a great learning project for them. And so that really gets you to these points here. It's real-world application. You know, how many times can I tell a kid, you know, this is why you need to understand slope. This is why. You know, it's a collaborative project-based learning project. They love working with younger kids. The idea that maybe we could come and work with Creekview or work with the elementary schools and they could maybe do some hands-on lessons with the younger kids, they just think that's exciting. So they're very into this project. It's cross-curricular learning. We're enforcing math. We're enforcing science. We're enforcing communication is a big part of this project, and you might not believe that. But, you know, as we're getting ready to build these boxes, I divided my class into groups, and I assigned project managers to each group. I gave them an objective, and I said, you need to work with your group. You need to develop a plan. You need to execute the plan. You need to evaluate the project when you're done. When we were done, I made them create a project rubric, and I said, what do you think an employer would find important to evaluate at the end? And so they came up with 7 categories. The 2 I'm most proud of are attitude and problem solving. Because at first they all wanted to say, well, attitude's so important because, you know, you really shouldn't count off against somebody if they're having a bad day and then they're just mad and they don't want to work. I said, is that really what we're evaluating? Or are we evaluating how well they can control that attitude and how they can prevent their own personal issues from interfering with the completion of a task? And you just saw the light bulb go. I guess that is important. You know, the same thing from problem solving. You know, understanding how it is more valuable to have that employee who can foresee a problem before it's a problem, before the equipment breaks, before you're down that time, and before you're down time to fix the equipment. So they came up with categories. They had to define what's excellent, what's above average, what's below average, and what's failing. They had to enumerate that. They had to qualify and quantify those things. And then they graded themselves. And it was very humbling to see some of their own scores for themselves. So great project to get them to kind of be introspective of themselves. Obviously, a ton of community involvement. Most of these students went to Creekview, so they're, again, proud to go back to the school and work together there. Business partnerships with Scotts and the Smithsonian have been amazing, and I think they like to see that they are investing back into the community. So if this project can be a success, that relationship can be a success. And then obviously career and college readiness to the max. I can't count how many times we have members come to our advisory committee meetings and tell me, I got kids who can pass tests like you would not believe, but I put them out there and the machine breaks and they will sit in that chair until I come and tell them what went wrong. How do I fix that? So this is a great way for them to realize most of the time this project is not gone as planned. So we have to figure out a way to work around that. So then that leads to our long-term implications. Being a research project sponsored by Scotts Miracle-Gro, it's great to have them helping us to fund this because that really helps us to learn the right equipment, the right tools, the right way to do it. I can be very innovative, and I can be very good at using what resources I have, but it's nice to show them this is what it really looks like. This is the real tool that you'll need to use, and this is the right way to use that tool while you're there. And so our question for this project, as I'm gathering, because we're still kind of in the early communication phases there, is can a school garden be used as a vehicle for student learning? And the answer is a resounding yes, it can. Transportation, maybe from a high school's perspective, might be a little tough to get our students from here to there, maybe on a more routine basis, so they can have more interaction. That would be great. But basically, this is a chance for us to go from the abstract to the concrete. We can get the kids in there, get their hands exactly on the materials we want them to learn about, and we can really accelerate that knowledge. Not just my students, who have all kinds of hands-on projects here, but back at Creekview and elementary schools, getting to see some of those scientific processes in place actually happening in the gardens is an amazing opportunity. It's going to encourage critical thinking and problem solving. I think I've given quite a few examples of those. And that all lends itself to that quote there at the bottom. I believe it was Bill Daggett, the high school, had come a couple years ago to present on one of the first days of school. And one of the things I really remember from that presentation that really resounded with me is how he said, if we can make learning relevant, we can be more rigorous. So when kids see how we're using slope, when kids see how we have to understand pH and how that affects nutrient uptake and how that's going to allow those plants to thrive, if we can balance that pH, we'll use less fertilizer, which, by the way, is going to increase our bottom line. That makes rigor possible, but they need to see the relevant part of the learning. So I think this project is a great way for us to make all of those things happen. So good news. Exciting stuff to share. Yes.
Wow, that sounds like a tough class. I'm not sure.
Well, I tell you, they get a little frustrated with me. I tell them in the course description, I said, we'll be outside when the sun's out and if it's just raining a little bit, and be prepared to get dirty. At first, they think that's great. Today, they weren't so happy.
You know, I think it's really neat to get kids out there really getting their hands dirty, right? I mean, really kind of being part of the process and kind of feeling, seeing, and all of those great things. That seems like an incredible program that you guys are doing. That's really very exciting,
and just like you said, it really fits in with the food service too. You know, when you grow something and you want
to
try it.
We're trying to solve problems. That's right. Kids eat those vegetables.
That's right.
Very good.
Am I correct in saying that this is a model program that, in essence, Marysville is somewhat the guinea pig, if you will, with Scotts and looking to go to a national model which other schools can replicate, correct?
Yes. And there is a research group behind it. There is a person that's in Denver, Will, I can't remember his last name, but he's already spoken with all of us kind of to get our initial, how do you feel about it right now? And then throughout, he checks in to see, how you know, what are you feeling now as a teacher? How do you feel like your students are growing? So there's the constant check-in and research component to this. It's not just us putting a garden in. It's a bigger picture.
Right, so I mean that's really what Scotts gets out of his end. They can start geeking out there with a national kind of project set or curriculum or however you want to say that and kind of.
So they're celebrating what is it 100 years or something? They've got a big anniversary coming up, and I'm thinking that this is part of it's kind of part of their marketing.
It's pretty. It just reminds me quite a bit of what we've been talking about all year. So fantastic job. Totally aligned to the things we talked about at the kickoff of the school year and letting kids be in control of their learning with, you know, gentle pushing. But my hat's off to you. That's exactly, that's the stuff that's impactful. You know, that's the learning that matters and is impactful and applies across the board.
So talk about project-based learning, right? I mean, that's it. Very good. All right, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Well, I got to tell you, this is a pretty good meeting so far.
Let's see, what's next?
Holy cow, I got to tell you, boys.
It's time to adjourn.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Thank you again. Okay, next up. We have our superintendent's report from our superintendent.
That's right. I would like to do two things in my report. I'm going to talk about the straight A fund application, and I'm also going to give you Chris Schmink and Rich Barrett. Neither one can be here tonight, so I'm going to read an update for Chris from the levy side. Let's start with straight A fund application. As you're well aware, the governor set aside $1 million. I'm sorry, $100 million, big difference, this year, and $150 million for next year for application for, in essence, seed money for innovation. So, which segues very nicely to the presentation that's just leaving. Excited to let you know that grant will be submitted
next Friday,
one more week. our partners in that project are Honda, the Chamber of Commerce, Union County Chamber of Commerce, Columbus State, and Ohio High Point. The plan is to, in essence, renovate this building. That money can be used for renovation. To create a high school option of choice. So high schoolers would be able to opt to attend school here. It will be an early college model. Early college really lends itself to a couple things. You, by the time you graduate, you could receive your associate's degree and your high school diploma, or up to 60 hours of college credit that you can take with you into a transferable program. The average in the study runs around 40 hours that kids obtain. It just kind of depends on what you're offering in some of those pieces. There will be three pathways. Here, the first one will be manufacturing. That is certainly where Honda makes a nice blend in. Union County has done a significant amount of research around the needs of our workforce in the upcoming years, and our response to that is to try to train where there are going to be gaps in the next 10 years around robotics, CNC, PLC, CAD. Will all be offered here under that manufacturing umbrella. Students would have the opportunity to earn stackable certificates. We'll offer welding. We would offer a CNC robotics certificate, multi-craft technician. So there's different things embedded within that strand. I would encourage you not to get too much into the weeds right now.
Come on.
Part of the money that we're asking for is really to plan everything out. So we have kind of this conceptual vision, but certainly it needs revision and courses put to that, but that's what that money is for, to do that planning. The second pathway, after lots of debate, and we did some surveying of our 7th and 8th grade students about their interests and strands that they would be interested in, we are going with an IT pathway, multimedia as well as networking pathway. And then the third pathway is health science. So as I started off, there's a second phase. So in the remodel plan, we are not doing anything with the far end of this building. That would be with health science, that end of the building would be used for that arena on a second ask. So as a part of a consortium, which is what this is considered, since Ohio High Point is our partner, you're eligible to ask for up to $15 million. We will get our total after the architects and engineers have finished. We should have a ballpark tomorrow and some, I guess, more firm numbers on Monday as well on that. So it's an incredibly exciting time. Aaron and Kathy have been heavily embedded in the process. Our transformational leadership, which is a group of teachers, community members, have spent a lot of time talking. Last spring, we spent time visiting and looking at other buildings and talking about what made sense for Marysville. And manufacturing bubbled to the top. So in essence, if you want to think pedagogy, it's definitely a STEM approach in this building, where we are talking, integrating the science, technology, math, engineering, all of those pieces in a problem-based approach, very similar to what you heard here this evening. So all this would happen if we get the grant. Columbus State, we're also looking for other avenues. Let's say we were not, but I'm confident we will get the grant. Some other options and things that we still might be able to achieve. The robotics piece is particularly exciting, I have to be honest. The thought would be Honda then would use that wing, which would take place in the former music area, as an adult training center. They cannot train their own. They cannot train people who are not yet employed at Honda because of security reasons. So that would be that they would do trainings for people here as pre-employment, and as well Columbus State down the line is interested in possibly making this a branch location. So we're going to do some outreach with Chamber and different CEOs from businesses to see the interest and do some creative thinking about how this building could be designed into a branch location for Columbus State as a partner of ours. So a lot of pieces and parts in there moving around, but incredibly exciting time. I have to tell you, everyone has been on, you know, a very short time frame. We didn't have much time to put this together, and Chris and Andy and Mike and Cindy and Aaron and Kathy have all just kind of rolled up their sleeves and jumped in, and it's really coming together nicely. So super excited.
And I will say, from after having many conversations with you about it, that our partners in this are very excited as well. I mean, Columbus State seems to be they seem to be all fired up about it, as well as the folks from Honda as well. Fair to say?
High Point meeting last night, and it was a work session talking about the plan for the upcoming year, and a good 30 minutes of that was just talking about this. Deb Wortman Deb's been doing, satellites for a long time. She's getting near retirement. She says, this is the most exciting project I've ever been a part of. She says, I couldn't think of a better way of wrapping up my career than being part of this.
I mean, really, what an enormous opportunity for our students. And really, for some of our community as well. They would come into the adult education part and take classes at Columbus State, in the off hours from school and stuff.
She says this is great. And she I was going because her and Jeff Price had nothing but great things to say about your leadership, about the people that, administrators that are involved in this. I mean, just a lot of I mean, many times they talk about how great it was to work with us, and it's just.
I think it goes without saying that this would not have happened without your leadership in this in particular.
We don't have it yet.
I'm saying something's going to come out. Something will come out of this, whether we get the grant
that's
or not.
What she said too.
And quite frankly, I mean, you're at the tip of that spear, if you will. It wouldn't happen without you.
So I appreciate that, but it's certainly been a team effort, and it's been a significant time. A lot of sleepless nights, a lot of waking up and being like, it's coming together very nicely. And I guess the other partner that I did not list was the Edwards Foundation. That's a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So they've been working with our transformational leadership team the entire time, just helping us think about our thinking, if that makes sense, and molding that for us. And next week, the pressure's on, and try to get everything put together. The one thing you have to prove is your sustainability. If you don't show that in the budget side, they never read the depth of what you're bringing. So the first review is looking at the numbers and making sure whatever your final bottom dollar was in May, that you can have more than that,
yeah, right.
but you can't have any less than that. How's that? Mm-hmm. We'll keep you posted as that continues to move. The grants are awarded December 17th. Money has to be encumbered by June 30th and spent by September 30th.
Wow.
Holy cow.
So if we get it, it's going to be... Whew.
Right.
A lot of action.
But it'd be like ants on this thing, right? It's like,
Mike is already a nervous wreck, so you're really nice to him. I think he's thinking, holy cow, I should have left before Daddy got here. But we are really excited. And again, Mike has spent a significant amount of time trying to walk through. And, just little things that we're talking about, like this space, would include... clusters of computers, pull-down screens. I call it Panera feel, so it would have a flexible learning space feel to it. Doing that with both locker bay areas, in essence, restructuring classrooms so that teachers could teach whole group, and then students could break out, and there will be glass areas so that you can still see those kids working together and being able to monitor. So super exciting. So that's one piece. So we'll keep our fingers crossed as that comes together. I'm not checking text. I'm actually pulling up Chris's
letter. Oh, that maybe you were going to text your kids or something.
No.
It's going to be a little longer.
Yeah, hey, what's up?
Any questions about that, I can answer. We're happy to
thank,
do that.
Thank you. Thanks for all the time. Like you said, the team effort. I mean, that's amazing.
It's been a lot
very
of fun.
Exciting.
It's been a lot of fun.
I mean, that's really when we said that we wanted to go to the next level when we interviewed you.
We're there.
That was it.
We're there.
That's where we are. We're going to get there by hook or by crook. I mean, there's no question that you're going to make that happen.
That's one thing that I mentioned was the partnerships. Sitting in the rooms while you guys are thinking through all this stuff, you just recognize that's the way you get things done.
Absolutely.
That's the way, I mean, you make things teamwork happen.
And it's that true, you hate to say Covey win-win, but it really is. Everybody is getting something out of it that they're bringing something to the table and they're getting something beneficial back out of it.
And the sum is bigger than the individual.
Right.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's really good.
She says she can't sleep at night. She keeps thinking about this building and all the things you can do.
I mean, it's going to make Marysville a truly destination district. I mean, there's no question about it.
Well, we believe that's the case. It will be actually, I have to say that two other school districts heard what we were doing and called to try to be a part of our grant. So that's kind of cool.
All right.
And I said, no thanks. Actually, location-wise, it just didn't seem to make much sense. But there'll be some opportunities because they're partnering with some similar people. So some shared resources.
Well, it sounds like that's a good model. I mean, it's just like we're building a good model for people to copy off of, and so...
So I've learned more about manufacturing than I ever thought I would need to know, but it's exciting. All right, Levy. Reminder to everyone that you can vote now.
9 to 4, 9 to 6, the Friday before the election, which
November
is
1st.
November 1st. Otherwise, you can go in and vote now or absentee vote. There was an email blast that went to parents this week about that. Certainly, we know the voters have heard a lot from us in the past year, this being the third opportunity to support a tax issue from the board. So when the team got together, I'm trying to kind of read through Chris's paraphrase here because it's very long. The idea was to do a lot of the same things we did in the spring, but to maybe go a little lower key than really reaching out. We felt like we really built a good database in the spring of our supporters, and so kind of functioning off those pieces to help build into this fall. To date, we've mailed out over 5,000 pieces of literature to voters that have been identified as positive. We've mailed out literature to early and absentee voters. We've placed the same number of and type of yard signs. I'm not sure exactly what that means, if that's as last time. We've run the same amount of ads as last levy campaign, and they're still running. We've participated in the homecoming parade, handing out literature and candy. There have been numerous speaking engagements. Rich Baird has really taken the lead in several of those community group meetings. We have a recorded radio ad, if you haven't heard, had the chance.
No, I haven't heard that.
1270.
Dick Douglas and Mayor Gore are on that ad, and I think maybe Chris Schmank as well. This Sunday, you have an opportunity to volunteer your time at the Lit Drop.
Come on.
It'll be at noon here in the building. It's an opportunity.
It is an opportunity.
And then next Saturday, the downtown, uptown, Marysville, there's a Scaryville. I always have a hard time saying those. Where we'll be handing out literature and candy as well to inform citizens of what our issue's about. So at the end of the day, it comes back to what we were saying in the spring. It's not an it's not an increase in your taxes. And excellent schools matter. This helps us continue the path we're on. If we can be successful, you're not going to see us till at the earliest 2016. And this particular issue has been around since 1989. So it's because of the continued support of the community that we've been able to keep this one going forward. It generates about $3 million, a little over $3 million for us, and that's what it'll continue to generate. So I think that is about it. Making sure I didn't forget anything. November 5th is the election day, but certainly have opportunity to vote prior to that. And encourage you to do so.
That's right. All right. Thank you. All right, Cindy, now it's time for the Treasury Report. I'll tell you what, you have a... You got a hard group to follow there. I'll tell you what.
I know. I do. But you know what? I think we got another good
presentation on hand.
Yeah.
So
we got a good presentation to come. First off, before I do anything on the 5-year forecast, I did have the conference calls with both rating agencies. We've gotten Standards and Poor's back. Their process is out. I'll have Moody's tomorrow sometime, and they both said if we would be going out probably next spring, they would be upgrading our rating level. So it's looking very, very positive on the rates, and everything's looking much better than what we have in the last few years. So they're very pleased with where we're headed, what we're doing, and that makes a big difference when you're looking at bonds and things like that. So there's still a little bit out there that can be refinanced here in probably 2015, but I think it'll be a really good way to go. So I think we'll be good on those. I think we sell the last first week of November, I believe. So we can sell.
Very good.
Okay.
Well, 5-year forecast. Thank you. five-year forecast looks extremely much better than what it did last May. And we'll talk about a few things there. But this first slide gives you a little idea of where we're at. 6.56 renewal. If we do not have that passed, we will be in deficit spending in we'll be in negative spending in 17 and definitely in 18 with an ending cash balance. Deficit spending probably by the end of next 15. Next school year, we'll be real close to deficit spending next year. That levy doesn't pass. This gives us a little idea of where our cash balance policy hits. We've got the 30-day cash balancing policy. The yellow is our unencumbered balance here. And our 30-day cash is the orange, so the bright orange. So you can see that 30-day cash is there, and what the ending cash balance is, it's well lower come 16, 17, and 18 if we do not have that levy that goes into effect the renewal. Our general fund revenue, the sources for our revenue, we are now over the 50% mark for the state. 52% of our state of our money comes from the state. We are more and more dependent every year. It seems like with the increases in the state funding this year, and then so 47% of our funding is our real estate tangible property. Remember when we had tangible personal property? That was 30% alone of our revenue. So you can see where this shift has happened ever since 2005. Local versus state, and this is another good way to look at this. Back in 2012, eliminated the stimulus funding, the SFSF money that was eliminated in 2012. Our Ed Jobs, we received some money in Ed Jobs. That was finished up last school year in 13. So we don't have any of those stimulus dollars anymore to come in from the state. House Bill 59 this year has increased our funding tremendously. In fact, we're on the cap of 6.5% for this year and a 10% next year. Helps immensely. But let's also think about what we would have if we didn't have that cap. $6 million from the state more this year, another $5 million next year. Another $11 million would be greatly appreciated, I'm sure, by everybody in this district. And we could do more great projects like the seeds and the STEM programs and things like that. Just to go back a little bit and make sure that everybody remembers, and I know everybody says, well, it's gone. Yes, it is gone, but we got to remember that we were locally funded, and this has impacted us, and that we need to remember that this still impacts us in the hold harmless payments from the state. So TPP was a big thing here in the district with our manufacturing partners and everybody else. So we need to make sure that that's one thing that is never forgotten about in the future. And the other area here is our values and where we're at right now. Because of that, this year with our reappraisals, the values, the estimated reappraisal for this year is $668 million. We were at $658 million in 2002. $10 million more in 11 years. We've lost that much value in this district because of TPP. And now mainly a large decrease in our amounts from Class 2, which is a commercial industrial area. So those areas, we're doing great things with what we've got, but we also have to understand what this means. So as values go down, our effective rates will go up. Our effective rates are very close to the caps in our commercial industrial class 2. So that's another thing that we've really got to keep our eyes on. Challenges to our operating levy and our operating revenue. House Bill 66 is going to last for a long time. state cuts in 12 and 13 reduced our reserves. We had to make those cuts for fiscal year 14. TPP reimbursement in 12 and 13, over $900,000 each year out of our operating money, and part of the money out of the permanent improvement funds. According to House Bill 153, that's supposed to stay at the current levels till fiscal year 26. And I hope that's the case. We've seen, as you look through the forecast, that forecast shows that there's some economic items within there for some discussion items, and that shows that the state's rainy day fund is stronger than it's ever been. So that makes a big difference. Our assessed valuations, they've dropped and decreased $36 million in Class 2 property. It's a big hit for us there. That'll cost us about $391,000 in local revenue because our effective rates, we can't bring in any more. So we're losing that. Local revenue's flat, and we've got the levy renewal in there. And we need to make sure that our local revenue, that we don't lose any more. Now we've just got to stay on top of that. And the positive things, the state has increased our money. In the forecast, we have leveled that amount out for the last 3 years of the forecast for whatever it is next year. So that makes a big difference. Where are we at with our expenditures? Our expenditures are at 83% of our budget. Is wages and benefits. A little on the high side. Really, we should be down there about 80%. So either our revenue needs to go up, keep going up a little bit and not raising those revenues or the wages and benefits, or we need to look at that. Benefits are going to keep growing faster than CPI. That's the way it is. Affordable Care Act, that's a big thing.
Yes, yeah, affordable.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's called. I don't know how they can call it affordable.
Depends on who you ask who it's affordable for, yeah. Right?
Well, as a lot of people have said, that's the largest tax increase that has ever come across the history of our United States. So our revenue, the reductions are there and estimated 14. We're still going to have an increase in our expenditures. But as you can see, they're stabilized. They aren't going up that much. And so the levy history, new money, nothing since 1998. Well, there was a 2008, only one. One in 2008, the levy renewals in 2013 and to 9 mills. That 9 mills is capped on commercial industrial. Prior levies, new money was passed in 98, the 8.9. It's real close to the cap for commercial industrial, that 8.9, believe it or not.
Wow.
Back in 1998.
The November, the 6.56 will expire at the end of December of 14. And then levy renewals do not provide additional revenue. Just remember that. We all know that. It's critical to keep this 6.56 to get that approved. The state, in this forecast, remember there's three state budgets. You've got 2014 and 15 is our first biennium. You've got the 16-17, and then you've got the 18. So what does the legislator do in those last three? You also have the mid-year budget review. So you've got different areas that we have to keep our eyes on there. As I said, the Class 2 effective rates mostly are capped. We need to monitor the expenses, and I'm sure that Diane's going to keep an eye on that. And we just need to keep fighting to keep our students here and keep doing an excellent job. And one thing that we really haven't talked about is open enrollment. I know that's something that we need to look at, but part of the state legislator in the budget said they want to look at that open enrollment and in that piece to see if it's working. So we've got to keep an eye on that to see, are they going to keep us or allow us to do open enrollment or not? So, you know, those are the type of things that we are going to have to double check and make sure everything's going through well. So that's the forecast. It looks much better than it did in May, for sure. And yeah, we are very fortunate that we received what we received from the state. It's mm-hmm. the first time for a long time that this district's received more money from the state other than federal stimulus dollars.
Certainly the long-term, you know, look at our forecast looks better than it has.
Yeah.
Than it, I can't even remember when. I mean, even the cash balance at the end of mm-hmm. the 5 years, you know,
right.
You know, if the levy passes, which I'm positive it will, I mean,
yes.
I mean, holy cow, we'll actually have over 30 days cash on hand.
Well, that's the only year that we are even slightly in deficit.
Right, that's it. Just right. starts to drop that year, yeah. But that's 5 years out. I mean,
well, yeah, and I think that's, you know, something we'll address.
Absolutely.
You know, before, I mean, actually soon, we'll mm-hmm. talk about how we'll meet that. But
right.
I mean, that's, I think the key on that is that that's, gives us stability. And mm-hmm. I don't think this district right. has experienced that in a long time. We've always talked, been worried about talking about cuts and layoffs and those things.
Well, it's always next year, right?
Yeah.
It's always next year. It's yeah. always next year. So,
and
it's,
so it's just nice to be able to look out and know that 2 years before you even start talking about new money mm-hmm. and we're looking at positive balances and no deficits for almost five mm-hmm. years.
It really comes from working that financial plan that we put together, mm-hmm. you know, a year and a half
ago. Well, honestly, it has a lot to do with what we did in December. I mean, I know that was a not popular thing, but, you know, there was a big push to not cut staff, to retain the staff, and to, you know, cut other things and keep fighting. We didn't. And that's, I think, those decisions, as tough as they were, helped us get to this place. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody's better for it. I think the staff has benefited from it. We were able to hand out raises. We have very stable finances for a while. We're able to do the things, focusing on education. Mm-hmm. So.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. That's it for the Treasurer's Report?
That is it.
All right. Next up, the Ohio High Point Report. I don't have any theme music, so...
We had a work session yesterday, and we just kind of talked about how we put together the 5-year forecast at High Point. And it's kind of interesting the way they go about doing it. I missed the one in May, but it kind of emphasized that everything drives up from the educational plan. So they actually have the administrators do the presentation, and they talk about the goals for the district. They talk about you know, some of the projections they made. They talk about the data that they looked at, and so it's not just kind of pulling numbers out of the air. And you know, so their emphasis is, since we're High Point's on the guarantee out there, the emphasis is on enrollment. And you start talking about revenue, because if we can't get off the guarantee, the governor was very clear that there probably won't be another one. So the goal for High Point is to get off the guarantee in the next year or two, and the current projections have us getting off the guarantee next year. You know, and next year we'll know if our numbers mm-hmm. hold up. That's good. If they don't, then we'll have to start making reductions. What I also thought was interesting is the administrators are up there and they showed us a triangle, and they showed revenue on one end, expenses on the other, and then the educational plan on the third. In the middle, it said balanced budget. So everybody throughout the organization has bought into the idea that we have to have a balanced budget, and we got to kind of, fund educational plan drives everything within the constraints of that balanced budget. Mm-hmm. And so the administrator spent most of the time talking. A lot of it was about, a good portion of it was talking about the STEM. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple other exciting program changes out there. Like I think I've talked about the welding that they're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they plan to get some additional enrollment through that. Their culinary program, they're actually, I don't know if it's a separate pathway or if it's just kind of an extension of the current one, but they're going to make it a master chef pathway, mm-hmm. something like that. So it was a pretty exciting day. One of the things I thought was interesting, Eric got up, he really didn't spend much time talking because he basically took whatever all the administrators talked about and said, here's the forecast based on some of those assumptions. But he did get into talking about the the fact that we're on the guarantee out there, and he showed the numbers and how those worked out, and best that he can figure out. And one of the things he mentioned was that you, whenever there's a guarantee, there's a cap, and, so, and which makes sense. That's how you pay for the guarantee. You cap other districts. Mm-hmm. And he says that, speculation, he wasn't talking about Marysville at the time, but he said when the cap or the guarantees go away, there's a good chance the caps will go away. And that would be a wonderful news.
Yeah, for us, yeah. Yeah.
You know, for somebody, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Unless, of course, they look at TPP as a guarantee, right. Then you know, right. We might just break even. But, so I don't know. I just thought that it was a good day talking about that stuff. I'm just if there's anything else. Not really. Outside of just, you know, I was just really proud to be from Marysville because mm-hmm. there's just so much talk about all the great work we're doing over here, and I just can't say enough how much they emphasize the leadership here and how important that was. So.
Very cool. All right. Thank you. Next up is the legislative report. Ms. Greer.
Okay. Something new. There's a few things that I'll report on that we heard about back in June when they were in session. So now they're back in session. Things are moving a little bit. But something new that was introduced yesterday, House Bill 299 regarding property valuations. And it would require counties, municipal corporations, townships, and school boards that file complaints against the valuation of property they don't own to pass a resolution approving the complaint and specifying the compensation paid to any person retained to represent the county, municipal corporation, township, or school board in the matter of the complaint. So that was introduced yesterday and referred to the House State and Local Government Committee.
So for every complaint, you have to pass a resolution?
And say how much you're spending to defend or to present this.
While approving, saying that you're approving that the complaint be filed. That's part of the...
Huh.
Right.
All right.
So then you can be aware of all the complaints that are filed on any on behalf of any of those entities.
Hmm.
I thought you would find that.
So they're trying to reduce.
I do.
Or to make aware what exactly is being filed if people perhaps don't know. And back in June, we talked about the PSEO program, House Bill 168, that would create a sub-program to permit students to participate in certified apprenticeship programs. And they have had it's been scheduled for three committee hearings in October. So that's moving from June. Physical education, the school districts can excuse high school physical education students who participate in school-sponsored athletic club. So that has had two committee hearings now in October since it's been just sitting since June. And then the House Bill 237 on Common Core, there was a committee hearing that was scheduled on October 9th. And I heard one report that the hearing didn't actually take place, but I don't know if that's so. Is that everybody showed up, but that they didn't actually end up having the hearing? So I'm not exactly sure.
I know the OSBA had a call to action about that.
Yeah,
today.
And I'm sure. I believe there's been requests for hearings to be scheduled.
Yeah.
I don't know if any are set forward or not. And there was a Senate bill introduced and a joint resolution to create a different way of funding schools.
What, four in the last 5 years wasn't enough? No, we need another one?
And it's kind of lengthy, but the crux of it is that the General Assembly will decide how much it costs to properly educate a child.
Haven't we already gone through this?
Perhaps not in exactly this way.
Decisions.
And so once they decide what the cost is per student, then the state will have some sort of a fund where they'll put part of the money into, and then automatically your school district, based upon your valuation, your taxpayers will be assessed taxes, a minimum of 2% based on the valuation that they will pay towards educating children. irrespective of the levies you may have.
So is that going to wipe out property taxes then?
Oh, it's
maybe
not going to wipe them out. You're
maybe
still going
to
pay them.
About the
well,
same.
Instead, of the, instead of the community members deciding it, the General Assembly says, okay, this is how much it's going to be, and so here's your, you know, space between 2% and 3 point mm-hmm. something.
I see.
And so that's what you're going to have to pay regardless.
Somehow I'm not.
I just want
to curious
to
see how that goes. I gotta be honest with you, I'm pretty happy with the way we're being funded right now.
Well, I just want to
so
let
far
you
this
know.
This formula seems to work out pretty well for Marysville. Yeah. So
well, that was introduced.
That's
so. Keep drawing on it.
All right, great. Thank you for that. Next up, the Finance Committee report.
All right, we met on October 7th and started out with Cindy giving us a review of the refinancing of the bonds. And we had four different options that we discussed, and the committee recommended that option three would be the best option for us to take, which I believe is what we ended up deciding at our work mm-hmm. session. Also looked at the five-year forecast and looked at the five-year forecast using a new software model that everybody felt was just included a lot more information that helped back up the numbers and explain the numbers. And then we spent some time talking about our committee membership and talked about where we want the committee to be, what direction we want it to take, and that we felt like we needed to have more leadership in the committee because we used to have a chairman, and then last year that, or about a year, a little bit more than a year ago, the chairman left, and nobody, we just didn't end up with another chairman. So we said, I think we really need one now. So we talked about that and talked about the fact that maybe we didn't need to meet monthly and that once we got a chairman, the chairman could work with the board to determine which projects really made sense to work on, and then the committee could determine how often they needed to meet to work on those projects. So at that point, we just asked our committee members to let us know if they wanted to stay on the committee, and we talked about trying to do some strategic targeting of looking for additional members for that committee. I think that was it.
And we probably won't meet until the first of the year, right?
Right. We're not going to meet until the first of the year. And we thought, I mean, we're transitioning with the treasurer, and right. So, and just with holidays and levy, we said, it's really...
Are you going to stay on the committee?
Doug?
I'm on.
I think it would be a strategically targeted selection there. Right. So.
Well, I mean, I'm obviously...
Yeah.
Since
yeah.
I certainly have an interest in... Yeah. It would be one of those things where the board would have to... They were okay with the new board, and I'd have to have clear with the wife.
That's right. That's probably the bigger hurdle to clear, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, good. Thank you for that. Next up, we have a safety report. Doug had asked that we add a discussion point tonight for arming school employees. So Doug, I'm gonna turn that talk over to you. That's.
I mean, it's really not much to it outside of the fact that, you know, my understanding is if we did have an armed person in each building, not just any person, but somebody who's qualified, or if there was somebody in the building that was armed, that the students and staff would be safer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what that looks like, I don't know. But my thought is if there was agreement on that, then I would think that we would want to do what we can to try to find a way to make that happen, that, you know, obviously with input from law enforcement, you know, in terms of training and who that might be. I'm not advocating for, you know, handing out school-issued guns to all teachers or administrators. I'm just saying that, you know, if there was somebody armed in a building, it could be an officer, it could be a peace officer, it could be a
right, it could be
SRO.
Anything from an SRO
yeah,
in every building
that
or something.
Like.
Down,
I don't
right.
know. I'm not an expert. But my thought is, the premise is that if there was somebody in the buildings, people would be safer. And if that's, you know, a premise we all agree on, and being the, you know, problem solvers that we are, that we should be able to find a way of getting that done. And I guess I would like to know where the rest of the board feels about that. But
I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, I'll be
it,
honest
it,
with
when we used to have the officers at the high school, were they armed?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I mean, yeah. Good. I mean, I think it makes sense because even, you know, you listen to some of the discussion. They say, well, you know, we're a small town, so response time can be fast. But the reality is, you know, within 1 minute,
right.
how many rounds can be fired?
Right.
You know, so I think having somebody there, but the key obviously is the training behind it.
It's the right person. It's not any person.
Right.
It's the right person.
Yeah. I mean,
well, they would have to take extensive. I mean, I would think that
You know, it couldn't be, I mean, they would have to do
right
long.
I mean, you have to go through the Ohio Peace Officers training, and I mean, it would be.
Right, I mean.
Or it'd be an Ohio Peace Officer or something, right?
You know, like
retired something, or rather
right.
military
get,
person.
If you didn't select someone that was actually on the force, that they would need to go through the force training.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that would be the one thing that if we did pursue that, that we would actually, because I know there's a lot of speculation as to what the roadblocks would be and the difficulties would. I would like to hit those and look at those. I would like whoever has this, takes this charge on, would look at those and see if there are ways to get around it. Like you said, maybe find somebody who has that prior experience. Or,
well, you could also look at retired police officers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that would either that or a retired military.
Right.
Someone that would be willing to come in as a job situation and make X amount of dollars, you know, which would be cheaper than us bringing them in from a force, an active, you know. So somebody that maybe is on the retirement end but keeps up his, you know, his firearm safety,
right.
You know, goes for his qualifications. Him, her, whatever,
right.
You know, but make sure that those qualifications are in place and stuff, because I think also for the insurance side, they would also have to have the same training, and you would probably have to add that on there, as this is saying, you'd have to add a law enforcement type policy. So,
and I think you'd certainly have to have a partnership with your local law enforcement on
mm-hmm.
you know, on
right.
on all of that. I mean, you
absolutely.
Would. I would think no matter who it was,
right.
you know, even if it's just an SRO, that they train with.
Yep.
I would like
right.
to think with our local law enforcement,
right.
so that there's a recognition there and an understanding
absolutely.
How they're.
I mean, we just would have to develop a process. You know, working with the law enforcement and
absolutely.
Our district and the building administrators and. You know, everybody would have to be really comfortable with it.
Yeah, I agree. And
parents, you know,
yep.
community,
yep.
obviously.
I'm going to interject here.
Yes.
Probably isn't going to surprise anybody. this is a very difficult topic for me. I'm an educator. At the end of the day, I'm a teacher. It's what I've always been. And I was not trained to fill that capacity. That my heart of hearts... That's not what we were trained to do.
Right.
Do I believe school safety is essential? Absolutely. I am not a fan for training our staff. I would entertain the thought of SROs, retired. You know,
right.
We could even explore those options. Mm-hmm. But I have to be honest, you know, in talking with... And I've given you a legal opinion. I've given you opinion from the sheriff, the police department, as well as our liability insurance, looking at those perspectives. But, you know, even in the conversations with police officers about that conversation, we talked about, they said, Diane, if we get a report that there's a shooter in that building and you have a teacher or an administrator or a custodian, and we walk in, and we see them shooting someone,
right.
that's who we're going to shoot.
Right.
We don't have a distinguishing factor, you know, to know that that's a teacher or to know that's the custodian or to know, you know, that that's now certainly someone, you know, in a uniform or whatever is a different piece.
And I want to be clear, I was not
yeah.
I was not suggesting that
training
we arm teachers or
right.
arm administrators.
Right.
But
right.
My thought is, I'm not the law enforcement expert, so I didn't want to say that that's off the table, although I would agree with you, it seems like it should be off the table.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like the group of experts should decide,
right.
and yourself included, and should sit down and
yeah, I think ultimately we would like to have an SRO or a similar type of person to do that. I think is the
right.
goal.
We looked at ways last spring to bring police officers. They are not far from our buildings. Let me tell you that's strategic right now.
Mm-hmm.
They are not far from our buildings when school is in session. Here.
Even Buntsold.
They are not far.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to do some things like we would. They could come in and eat lunch with us, but they're not allowed to do that. They would have to, you know, pay for their lunch.
Well, very nutritious lunches, though. From
being here. So we are working, you know, collectively together and looking at different options. I guess I just had to make kind of my opinion and stance clear. I don't know that, you know, our main staff, in my mind, and I could be way off base, and it's a sad day, let's be honest, that we even have to talk about this for our teachers and for our kids. It's a sad day. It shouldn't be that way, but it is our reality, and I accept that. But, you know, looking for other ways to, you know, we're fortunate enough to have a great relationship right now with the police department and are able to have an SRO in the high school. But in all our buildings, certainly would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or a strategy that would, you know, that, you know, certainly it would be nice to have an SRO in every building, but possibly, you know, how do you get your response time so you know there's a patrol car somewhere within a minute or close to.
I can't guarantee you.
That's impossible.
I mean, it's almost impossible.
As you brainstorm, you can talk about, you know, rotating random appearances at different schools. You know, like just doing things where it would deter people from wanting to go in there.
That's
because they wouldn't
happened.
Know.
Right. Those
yeah.
things are already happening.
They just pull up. You know, just
in the parking lot, quite
yeah.
often doing reports.
Right.
My parents call me and say, why is there a police
right.
officer sitting in Creekview's parking lot or
right.
Northwood's parking lot?
I guess that's
strategic by nature.
Right.
This is a very, you mentioned brainstorming, and what first rules of brainstorming is what, there's no bad ideas or something
right.
like that. And this I know this is a very polarizing topic, and I know mm-hmm. there are people that are just, whether it be how they're brought up or their background, are just, they're just against the idea. And organizations like OSBA, you know, they'll say, we're not picking sides, but you read what they say, and you can tell they picked the side. You know, there's just people that are just, their effort to try to get it done is to find reasons not to do it. And I think us as problem solvers here in Marysville, that if we feel that really having somebody armed in the building would make students safer, mm-hmm. then we can find a way of getting that done. Through partnerships, through, how, you know, in a way that would make everybody comfortable, mm-hmm. I just feel like it has to be a real brainstorming type of effort, not just, you know what I mean? And that's, I guess that's what I would like to see happen.
Yes,
not,
absolutely.
Not with the board. Not with the board. Not an open session board.
No.
Yeah, right.
But
when you say arming somebody in a building brings a whole different meaning to me personally because of the police department background that my family
mm-hmm.
has,
mm-hmm.
my husband has. There is no training that we can give our staff anything close to what a police officer has ever had. And I've never fired a gun and probably never will, even though I know there's many in my...
I want to make sure I say this. I'm not advocating for that.
Right, yeah.
Because I agree. I have a hard time...
I don't think
that
staff should ever touch, and that's... We've had this conversation ever since
yeah.
Sandy Hook
yeah.
and
I agree.
Columbine and everything, because no one knows what an officer goes through or anyone on the force when there's a shooting, and I mean anyone from the dispatcher down to, and they might not have even been there, mm-hmm. but nobody understands that better than an officer or an officer's family member. Mm-hmm. And I would never want to put a staff member that has not had their training in that type of situation. I would feel very sad.
I don't think anyone's suggesting the notion
no.
that you put a firearm in somebody's hand who's
yeah.
not been trained. That's just
yeah.
insane.
No, but that's some of these other districts are doing that, and that's not.
Well, my understanding is the ones who did, they were having the extensive training. It wasn't like it was not a concealed
right.
carry. It was not that kind of training, but it was people who wanted to. It wasn't okay. Can we have a volunteer or somebody who wants to be armed? It
mm-hmm.
was not that situation at all.
I agree, though. I think it has to be on the line of an officer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
SRO.
Right.
In fact, didn't I see in one of those notes somewhere that the Montpelier, the custodian up there, was a former...
Yeah.
I mean, he was a former peace officer.
Right.
20-year...
Right.
officer, correct? I mean, that's...
I didn't know that until I just saw that.
Yeah, I didn't either, yeah. But I guess that's, you know, that makes a little mm-hmm. bit, you know...
That makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, it makes
the article that was written and made it sound right. like this hand in mouth at all.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering
but,
about
you
that.
You know, I guess that possibility does exist. Perhaps not here, but in some school districts where you might have staff members, whether they're teachers, administrators, or whatever, who had been in the military or who had been a you know, police officer who, you know, would already have that training.
Well, and my thing with that, like that's why, and I agree with what you're saying, because you've got to staff people who would be doing actually two roles.
Yes.
Trying to defend
right.
the children
yeah.
and trying to keep them safe at the same time, trying to
right.
keep,
right.
you know, I mean, so
absolutely.
Which role do they go to first? I mean, that would be very...
They go
that
to the role that they
hard,
feel
yeah.
the most comfortable with.
Well, and like
right.
Jeff said, the
right.
person with a gun, you'd want to be more of a first responder.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. that's really... If you put a gun in someone's hand, they are your first responder. And I don't know how you could expect a teacher to
right.
just to say, well, kids,
yeah.
stay here. I'll be right back. Barricade the door behind me when you're talking to, you know, second yeah. graders. I mean, that's just... That's not realistic. That's not what they're there for. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that would be a... that would just be not even an idea we would.
Well, if the task at hand is to organize the opportunity to bring some leadership together around options, I'm happy
yes.
to lead that charge.
Yes, I think that.
And
I think that's
back to that group.
Yes,
I group with that information.
Yes, I think that's. Mm-hmm. I think that was really the bottom line of what we're looking for.
Okay.
All right. Next up, Sue has a riveting talk about the OSBA platform that I'm sure if you read your 54-page document, you know.
Yes, I mean, just kind of a quick update. They have this annual event, and last year I was a delegate, and I'm so excited to be the delegate on this year where they review their the OSBA legislative platform. So that's their platform that guides all of their work throughout the year and in trying to support or oppose various legislation issues. And so anyways, as the delegate, I will be attending the meeting on Monday afternoon, November 11th, and at that point, they'll be reviewing all of their updates to the platform, and they also had four amendments given to them, of which they voted on, and three of them passed. And so I gave that information to you guys, and I'm just really kind of supposed to talk to my board and see if there was any major comments about those amendments. You know, hearing none, I reviewed them and I thought they sounded pretty reasonable. So it's my job to vote for the board. So if there's no... Okay, well, if you have a chance, look them over, and if you have any concerns, let me know. But otherwise, you know, I will most likely just say yay. I vote for them.
Yep, I read them and they all look good to me.
Okay, good. I mean, that's it for me, for that.
Good. Oh, fantastic. Next up, an update on the treasurer search, please.
Do you want?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to add a to-do. Applications closed on the 10th, and Sue and I sat down with the ESC and Diane and went through them, and there was 18 applicants.
Oh, good. Good pool.
I think mm-hmm. we had a pretty good pool. We felt pretty good about it.
Mm-hmm.
We've narrowed that down to five that we would like to interview for the first round. And the first round starts... What was
October 28th?
Not this week. Yes.
October 28th?
The week of the 28th. That's right.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yep. And so the plan is that Monday we would do hopefully one that day and spend a little bit of time up front just kind of preparing for it. And then Tuesday and Wednesday we would do two candidates each day. Between now and then we have to get together our list of questions. We have some binders for you guys at the ESC provided that has all the resumes and stuff in there, but also a pool of questions that we can pull from.
Do they happen to have an electronic version of that? You don't expect me to type those, do you?
No. You just got to pick a couple, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can type those.
I can.
Or you can scan them and put a...
That's right.
I know someone who can scan them.
I know
someone kidding. Who can scan them for me.
But yeah, so but this week we got to get a list of questions together on it. And Sue has instructions on everything in each of the boxes.
So is that a deliverable from us? For next week?
To me by Wednesday, I believe.
Okay.
By the 22nd, if you could get the questions that you think we should
ask, and then we'll look at all of them. And we really want to have about two questions per area. There's five different areas based on the standards for treasures, you know, leadership, professionalism, financial management, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. And then we'll, when we get together, we'll kind of whittle those, or you'll whittle them down, and then we'll figure out who does.
Right.
Yeah, and I think if we have time, we might send those to the ones that we whittle down out, and then let you pick the ones that you'd like. Because we thought it'd be nice to know which ones you have before you show up on Monday.
Right.
Because I remember when we did the superintendent one, you kind of, when you start to say them out loud, you're like, well, that doesn't sound so right.
And kind of give you a chance to think about a follow-up question, or, you know,
not that
how.
You need time for that.
No, I got. Man, I always got mine. I'm set.
And then the other thing was, is if there's any other question that you think will make a huge difference between selecting somebody to go into the second round, I can't wait for the second round for that question, to let us know in advance so that we can build it in.
Make sure that's in there.
All right.
And then the second round, it'll be a week off. So after we enter that week, the 28th, we'll decide who goes to the second round. There'll be a week between then and the final round, which I think is the
November 11th and 12th.
Yeah.
So yeah, and there's a calendar in there, and originally November 7th had been listed as a second round date, but Bill can't make that date. So just the 11th and 12th are available.
And those were on the calendar.
They're on the calendar.
Yeah, okay.
In your books.
Okay, I have those.
Yeah, there's all sorts of good information in the books.
It's 6 o'clock, right? That's what we...
6 o'clock.
Yeah, 6 o'clock. And here or the board office? I guess the board office. Yeah, the board office. Yeah.
And the thought is, if we only end up with two going in the second round, we'll just shoot for the Tuesday, which is the 12th.
Okay.
Yeah, at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
At 6 as well? If there's only two, right?
Right.
Well, I think they all start at 6, right?
Yeah, they all start at 6.
Yeah, they all start at 6. Mm-hmm. And how much, what do we allocate, 45 minutes on the first round per?
No.
Is that what we, or do we do?
An hour.
An hour?
Yeah. And we've got kind of estimated times on your little sheet so that you can set up your babysitting or whatever you need.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I didn't want to say anything, but okay. All right, good. Well, thank you guys for spending all that time, I know, going through the paper, you know, the paper That's whittling, fine. If you will. So. All right. Well, so good candidates then, yes?
Yeah.
Very excited about that?
So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good deal. None? So next up is public participation. I have nobody on the list. Anybody here want to address the board? All right. Seeing no one. All right, next up, I need a motion to approve the minutes from the September 19th regular meeting and the October 9th, 2013 work session, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion on those? Edits, changes? Hey, hearing none, can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Weird.
Yes.
Mr. Beatty.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Lasseter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve item 9.1, the Treasurer CFO action items, please, as submitted.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Cindy.
I think I've said enough. I think all the items in there are basically the end of the month items. There wasn't anything special about September. And then the forecast.
Okay.
Quick on the SM2 is the one that compares the actual versus estimated, and is that estimated numbers go in there when the forecast gets approved? Okay.
It's in yours. All right, was there any other questions? Last chance on your forecast question before we approve it. Okay, hearing none, then can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lasseter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Beatty.
Yes. Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve item 10.1, the HR action items from the superintendent, please.
So moved.
I'll second that. Moved and second. Diane, you want to add anything to that or no?
I don't think I need to add a lot of supplementals for the winter home instructors.
Okay.
Where the policy updates were, too.
That's in the next one. I split the two out.
Okay.
So.
And that's just for reading.
Yeah.
You're not voting on it.
All right. Any other questions on that? No. Hearing none, then can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Brown.
Okay. Motion carries. All right, next up, I need a motion to approve items 11-1 and 11-2 as submitted by the superintendent, please.
Second.
Moved and second. Ms. Mankins?
I just kicked myself clear out of the program, so let's wing it here. I don't know what I did.
Well, we had the volunteer listing for,
right.
for that.
I gotcha. We had the lease for the YMCA in that section.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation we've been talking about, commitment from them. Mr. Shortell has already signed off on his commitments on that, so that's on there. We have a healthy list of volunteers, as always, as well. Mine doesn't have the attachments.
The DPNL agreement?
What's that?
Oh, yeah, the DPNL.
DPNL agreement.
Right. This agreement does not commit us to anything at this point, but it allows us to, we need to
research.
Right. Research. We need to go ahead and get it signed, and then we can always back out if that's not the direction we want to head. So we are trying to, Mike is working on top of the other project, looking at trying to make sure we're getting the best deal, looking at energy in general. So he's been to some meetings with MEC and had conversations with Aspen.
We're talking to there's another group, First Energy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those commodities that it's up and down right now, and so we've got to make a decision probably by November 1st. So
mm-hmm.
Mike and I are going to meet with some people as far as talking to them about different direct energy is another one that we're working
mm-hmm.
with, and trying to get the best deal and see where we need to go because it is such a volatile and it's expensive. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, watch what we're doing.
Is there anything else you want to comment on there?
All those policy updates.
Those were updates that Andy had been working on.
Is that just first read? I saw that on
there. I know. I thought it was just first read.
Just the first read.
Okay.
Just the first one.
Okay. And really, the majority of them are just due to legislative changes.
Changes in the revised code
right.
requires our policies to
right.
be updated to reflect.
Yeah, like teacher evaluation, third grade reading.
Yep. Okay, do you have anything else? Any other questions? Hearing none, then, can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mrs. Devine?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Reedy?
Yes, motion carries. All right, this brings us to the end of our meeting. Any final comments from our board members? Mrs. Powers?
Yes, Diane and I are currently setting a date now that we've finally seen our way to find some time with the Drug and Safety Committee. And they are currently, we were invited to the Sheriff's Department does a community, teaching now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we were invited on November 4th to come and see where there is participation from parents. Like, we have a set of parents that would like to address the schools. From a child that was in the school that got hooked on heroin,
mm-hmm.
and they would love to set up to talk to the parents, along with the child who has now recovered, so we can now they've changed it and it's on the first night of our superintendent, so we can't go. But they're talking about filming it for us.
Oh, nice.
So that way, when we have our committee meeting, we can show the committee and then as well. Show the board.
Great.
Okay.
Very good.
To kind of get, but these parents have willingly actually asked and volunteered to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So that just kind of give you an update on that stuff.
Okay.
And everything tonight was exciting.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Mr. Lassiter.
I just want to thank Diane and the administrators that have been involved in that project, that STEM program. I know it's been a lot of late hours and hard work and
absolutely.
It's just I really do think that, among a lot of other good things we're doing in this district, are really going to put Marysville on the map, not just in the state. I mean, I think we're already on the map statewide.
Mm-hmm.
I think this could be bigger than that, which is exciting.
Absolutely. Ms. Greer.
I'll go on to that, too, because that is exciting, and that was one of the things that we were really looking for, as you said, in a new superintendent, someone who would embrace our community and the businesses, and you've just done a fantastic job. Thank you.
Ms. Devine.
I'll third that. let's see, as I was thinking about our meeting tonight, I wanted to shout out good luck to our football team and the band and the cross country as they continue their fall stuff, and congratulations to all the other fall sports teams. I mean, I've read a lot of good articles, and it's nice to see all those kids out there participating and being Monarchs. The Seeds program, I'm so excited about that because I love gardening, and I was actually at Creekview and got to see their site, so that's just so cool for our kids. Just great information. Proud to be a Monarch.
All right.
And go vote, right?
That's right. Go vote. Ms. Mankins, you have
show up for the lip drop.
Final.
No, I think I'm good. I've said enough to
okay.
Cindy.
I think I've said enough also.
All right. Well, I mean, I'll just close it out by saying this has by far been one of the best board meetings we've had in a long time. There's a tremendous amount of stuff that this community needs to be excited about going on in our schools. I mean, there's just no question. It's an exciting time to be part of the district. It's a great time to be a student, quite frankly, or have kids in the district.
It is.
You know, a lot of good things going on, so.
Thanks to all our staff.
Yep. So thank you again to all of you. Awesome. and certainly to all of our staff for, I know, all the work that they're putting in as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I need a motion to adjourn then, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Can I get a roll call, please?
Who's second?
Yeah.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yeah.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, we are adjourned at 9:10.